Well, today on Inside Utah Politics, a sit-down with the Lieutenant Governor. Our state's top elections officer weighs in on the final draft of mail-in reform and the scandal over primary signature gathering. The ACLU picks its battle where they come down on the other side of the election reform debate. Plus, could this be the future of air travel? Air taxis take flight in demonstration of what lawmakers hope to see a lot more of over the next decade.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program with the sweeping reforms to Utah's election laws. House Bill 300 passed in the final hours of the legislative session, and the governor seems to like it. Now, the final bill will phase out universal mail-in voting by 2029. It will require ID numbers on return ballots and pushing up the deadline to require ballots to be in the clerk's hand by election day. Now, I'm joined today by the state's chief election officer, Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson. Lieutenant Governor, thank you for joining me today.
It's great to be here, Lindsay.
Okay, so this bill was the talk of the town when it came to election reform this year. So just talk to me about, the governor seems likely to sign it. Is that how your administration understands it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The governor is going to sign HB 300, but I'm going to push back just a little bit. We keep hearing that this is phasing out universal vote by mail, and I think that that means something different to people who say that than it does to people who hear that. And I want to make sure voters understand that we saved vote by mail in Utah.
Okay.
We still have vote by mail. I think we'll probably always have vote by mail unless some new, better form comes out that's good for voters. We never sent ballots to every registered voter. It was only active voters. So now, voters under this new bill, starting in 2029, so after the next presidential election year, will have to opt in some way to vote by mail to be able to receive their ballot in the mail.
But that is new because we've always just gotten mailed ballots if we were an active registered voter. Now we have to take that extra step of making sure we check a box. And I know there's a lot of checkpoints along the way, but it's an extra step. How do you explain that? Why are we okay with the opt-in version?
Well, personally, I'm not really okay with the opt-in version, but you know what? That's how the legislature works. That's how laws work. We don't all get everything we want. We are committed to making this as easy as possible for voters. So everyone has to renew their driver's license, for example, every 8 years. So this opt-in, it's not going to be every single year. A lot of states, if you want to vote by mail, you have to opt in every single year. We're not doing that. It's every 8 years, so it can be when you renew your driver's license, when you update your driver's license, when you change address. We're also hopefully going to be able to put something in the envelopes of the ballots that do get mailed out in the next few years so that voters can, you know, click a QR code and do it online, do it in a way that's easy, that's not going to catch them off guard.
Do you think that's a provision that may change in the next 4 years, or are we pretty certain that we are going to have to be opting in? Because I've heard some pushback saying, well, why don't we just require the people who don't want to receive a ballot to say, I don't want to receive a ballot, instead of making everyone opt in?
Look, I thought, since we're kind of an all of the above state, right? We allow people to vote in person if they want to. We allow them to vote by mail. We have early voting. I tried to pitch the idea that voting by mail, if you voted by mail last year in the 2024 election, that was in fact an opt-in. I didn't get very far with that idea, unfortunately. But we do have a few years to figure this out. I don't want voters to panic, but I do hope that they can pay attention and be proactive, because the very last thing we want is to disenfranchise someone or catch someone off guard.
The other big change is this piece that voters no longer will have their ballots counted if they put it in the mail in time. This bill changes it so ballots have to be into the clerk's office by 8 p.m. on election day. That is a major shift for Utah voters. How can you assure folks that, are they going to be notified if their ballot's not counted or something like that? Because you could put it in the mail 2 weeks before, and for whatever reason it doesn't get there. How do you solve for that?
So the in-hand provision, where all ballots have to actually be in hand, in the clerk's hand by 8 p.m. on election night, instead of be postmarked the day before, which is how we've done it for years. We've messaged that. We've really tried to pound that home with the public, with voters, that they had to have their ballots postmarked before the day before election day in order for them to count. Now we have to change all of that messaging. This is a source of great frustration for me. This piece, I think, goes into effect immediately. And hopefully all Utahns realize every year is election year. Every year is election year.
We have so municipal elections this year.
Yep. And every vote counts. So if you put your ballot in the mail maybe the Thursday before Election Day, and for some reason it doesn't get into your clerk's hand by 8 p.m. on election night, your vote's not going to count. This is what I hate about the in-hand provision. Is some, it used to be that, you know, it was something that the voter did or didn't do,
right,
that would make their vote not count. But
right,
now it can be outside of the voter's control. So that piece worries me, and I hope that voters really take responsibility. They're going to have to take responsibility to make sure that they're sending their ballot in the mail early, signing up for the ballot tracking service that we offer to get notified when their clerk has received their ballot and is counting their ballot, to make sure that they're checking, to make sure that their vote actually did count. And if it didn't for some reason on Election Day, I guess they could go in and vote on a provisional ballot.
Right, and double check that in person. So a lot of pushback came from the county clerks. Not only does this make major changes for voters, but it's death by a thousand cuts for the clerks. One of their big concerns is the fact that adding the last four of your social, they say, will actually slow them down in counting, because there's no automatic machine that can check these. As much technology as we have, it sounds like their Agilis machine, right, which is the machine that sorts all their ballots, isn't programmed to check the last four of their ID. So the first they have to do that, then they have to go in and check the signature. I'll also point out there's not a signature provision after 2029, which means we'll just be verifying off the last four. It doesn't seem like this does what lawmakers wanted to accomplish: speed up results and make elections more secure.
One thing that we did hear loud and clear from voters, well, there are two things. The first thing is voters love vote by mail and they trust it. The second thing is voters do like better voter ID laws. And so this bill really does try to strike that balance, and I commend lawmakers for trying to do that, right? It hopefully doesn't swing too far one way or the other, but voters want better voter ID laws. So that's what this tries to do. We do have some time to figure this out if we didn't get it right this year.
And hear me when I say I fully recognize you didn't create this bill, but here you are as the state's chief election officer, who now kind of has to explain to voters, right, what we changed. So I recognize, and these are questions I posed to lawmakers as well who are crafting this bill. But talk me through the cost of this, because we're making all these changes. We appropriated about $2 million to do this, but that's not the sole cost. Counties are going to bear the burden of some of this cost.
Yes, counties will have to bear the burden. I think that, look, the original bill was in a much different place than the bill that we ended up with. Mm-hmm. And I have to commend the bill sponsor. I have to commend the Speaker of the House, who really was willing to engage and come together and say, look, here are the objectives that I'm trying to solve. Help me solve them. And we were happy to try to help provide some solutions to some of those objectives. The $2 million is so that we can help notify voters of the changes. The last thing we want is to disenfranchise people. We want to make sure people understand what they need to do, what some of these changes will require of them. And look, we as Utahns, we believe in personal responsibility. Voters should be no different. They have control of their ballot, and they need to make sure that they are responsible for knowing what the laws are, for turning their ballot in on time, to double checking, making sure that their vote was counted appropriately, and that if they do put it in the mail, they put it in the mail in plenty of time. We have lots of drop boxes. We will continue to, to expand the number of drop boxes that are out there. I have always had three main principles for voting since I've been the state's chief election officer. That is, we should have accessible voting that's not overly burdensome for people. We should have secure voting. People should know that their vote is going to be counted and counted accurately. And we should have simple voting. The more you add complexity to something, the worse off you are. And so we are committed to, as much as we can, working with the legislature to maintain those three principles.
Does this bill do all three?
Some more than others.
That's a fair answer. Okay, let me switch topics. In our last just quick 2 minutes we have, this week we saw some charges filed against those who gathered signatures. These were people going around allegedly forging signatures on packets for candidates to get on the ballot. One of them was for your campaign, the signature firm that you hired. Meanwhile, we had this audit back in September that looked at valid signatures and determined that it was likely that both your campaign and others got the required signatures. But how can you assure voters that none of the valid signatures that were counted in that audit were these potentially fraudulent ones?
Well, the reason that they were flagged is because the county clerks who were verifying those signatures saw anomalies. So those
But
were...
the audit, though, we were looking at the validated signatures, right, that had already been counted. That's the piece that's not totally connecting for me.
Well, and that's something I don't know the answer to.
Okay.
I'll have to look at that. But voters should know that if people cheat, and that's what happens, right? These people apparently got greedy, wanted to get as many signatures as possible because they were being paid by the signature and were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing, and they got caught. This is not the first time that has happened. I do hope it's the last time that people try to cheat. It probably won't be. But that's the process working, right? They got caught. These were not candidates who were out there trying to cheat. These were people, contractors who were hired by companies, the candidates paid to get these signatures, and I think that the candidates are the victims in all of this. I'm glad these people got caught. There's no room for cheating of any kind in elections.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson, thank you so much for coming on today and answering some of these questions about major changes and these signature charges. So we appreciate it. Still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, the other side of the coin, what the ACLU has to say about election reforms soon to become law. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, welcome back. You just heard from the lieutenant governor about House Bill 300. The governor seems poised to sign it despite some reservations she may have. But there are some groups actively campaigning to see it vetoed. I'm joined today by Ellie Menlove from the Utah chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. That's the ACLU of Utah. Ellie, welcome to Inside Utah Politics.
Thanks for having us on, Lindsay.
Hey, thank you for being here. All right, just talk broadly. Talk to me about your concerns about this bill.
We have several concerns. Like the Lieutenant Governor said, the bill has improved a little bit from the original version, which would have ended vote by mail altogether, but it still has a few concerning provisions in it. First, the opt-in provision, the fact that you have to affirmatively opt in to get your ballot in the mail, that's going to inevitably lead to a lower voter turnout. We've heard from county clerks on both sides of the aisle, Ricky Hatch and Lonnie Chapman, that that's going to lower voter turnout. So that is a big concern of ours, just putting this extra obstacle to voting by mail.
Yeah, and let me pause you right there. Does it matter that we have checkpoints all along the way? You know, when you register, when you update your license, you know, they're going to put a card in our ballots. Does that matter, or is it just the fact that we have to take this extra step to opt in? Granted, in 4 years.
Right, in 4 years. And they did do some good work making it easier for people to opt in. But at the end of the day, it's just another thing that Utahns have to remember. I mean, Utahns are busy people. They lead busy lives. You know, regular people aren't thinking about elections and how they're going to vote all the time. They're thinking about who they're going to vote for a couple weeks before the election. And people are used to getting their ballots in the mail right now. So any change to that is going to be confusing for them. And it's going to inevitably lead to some people missing opting in, missing getting their ballot, and just being unsure about how to vote.
Okay, so the opt-in provision is one. Other provisions that you're concerned about?
Sure. The postmark change deadline as well. So right now, as long as you postmark your mail ballot by the day before Election Day, it is counted no matter when it's received in the elections office. But under HB 300, your ballot needs to be received in the elections office by 8 p.m. on Election Day. And we have a lot of voters who vote from far away. And you know, we've got college students. We have voters in rural areas whose ballots are processed to the USPS in other states and things like that. It just takes control away from voters who right now have complete control over whether their vote's counted. They can go in and get their ballot postmarked on time, but you really just don't have a guideline on how long it might take for your ballot to arrive otherwise. I think that a smarter policy would have been to push back the postmark deadline to a little bit earlier if they're worried about ballots getting there after Election Day. I think that's a smarter way to do it, which still preserves voter control.
So why did we go with this in-hand provision? What do you think it's solving for lawmakers?
I think the concern that's been expressed is that they want to get election results faster. So they think that if they've got all of the ballots that they are going to have to count on election day, that they'll be able to get results out on election night or the day after, soon after. They've been saying that that will increase voter confidence in elections, but we're really not seeing the polling that suggests that getting results quicker is going to affect, you know, the majority of people's views of the security of elections. We at the ACLU think that the most important thing is counting every ballot fairly and accurately, and sometimes that just takes time.
So any other provisions you're concerned about besides opt-in and then the changing the postmark deadline? Also, we require the last four of your ID on the ballot, right? So we'll have to write this on the back of our envelope and sign the back of the envelope. There's a little bit of weediness in there in that in 2029, they haven't fixed the part where we have to still sign it. They've taken out that part. And so I imagine there will be changes to this over the next 4 years.
Yes, we are concerned about the voter ID element. We appreciate the bill sponsor and the legislator working to get this a government-issued ID card for indigent folks who may not be able to get a license or another government-issued ID so that they can use that to vote. But we're still concerned about just this extra hurdle of getting an ID at all. Some Utahns find it hard to get an ID, whether it's indigenous voters who may not have a birth certificate or other documentation, or our senior citizens or people with disabilities. There are systemic barriers to getting voter ID or to getting government ID to use as voter ID. So we worry about how that might affect them.
So has this bill gone far enough to address those groups in your mind? Because there are provisions for treaty cards and tribal cards, stuff like that, other forms of ID if you don't have that state-issued identification. But does it go far enough in your mind?
Those things certainly help. We would just like to see no voter ID requirement whatsoever. We already have the signature verification, as you were saying, and that has just been shown to work time and time again. The recent audit showed almost virtually no fraud or no one voting inappropriately. I think it was two voters who were deceased out of, you know, over a million people who voted. So I think that's extremely minimal, and that the signature verification process has been working.
Cleaning up the voter rolls, another argument lawmakers made. They sort of argue the opt-in option, if people are having to opt in, that will naturally weed out some folks who don't vote, thereby cleaning up the voter rolls. Do you see it the same way, or is there a better way to clean up our voter rolls?
I don't see it the same way. I think that taking these people off of the voter rolls, I think that the current version of the law is if you've missed two elections, you're dropped off of the list of people to get a mail ballot, even if you've requested one. People forget to vote, even in two consecutive elections. Those people should still be able to rely on the fact that they're going to get their ballot in the mail. It's not mandatory to vote in every single election, and I think it just creates consistency and a system that people can trust and rely on, that everyone's getting a mail ballot in the mail. We just don't share the same concern about cleaning up the voter rolls. I think there are different ways to do it. The clerks are better to speak on that than I am.
Sure.
But I would have hoped that they would have worked with the clerks more on that.
So you heard the lieutenant governor say it's going to be signed, likely by Governor Cox. So what is the step for you guys if it is signed? The next step, I should say.
So I think that our next step is working with the clerk's offices and working with other groups to publicize these changes. I think that's another big problem about the bill. It does have an over $2 million fiscal note that's going to help publicize some of these changes, which is a huge cost to make unnecessary voter changes. But putting that aside, I think that our next step is to help some of these groups get the word out, make sure that voters know these things. Like I was saying before, not everyone is keeping up to date with the minutiae of the changing election and voting laws. So we want to make sure that people know that they have to opt in by 2029, know the different voter ID requirements and the postmark change, especially because the postmark change takes effect immediately. So we want to make sure that people know that. So we're going to be engaging in some voter education.
But do you go so far as to challenge this with a lawsuit?
Well, we're always considering our different legal channels, but I'm not at liberty to say right now.
Fair enough. Ellie Medlove from the ACLU of Utah, thank you so much for explaining your views on why you disagree with this bill, and we appreciate your time today. Well, coming up on Inside Utah Politics, we have liftoff. Stick around for a sneak peek at what lawmakers hope the future of transportation will look like here in the state. Fredericton Mayor Trent Staggs says he will not be running for re-election. Staggs has been the mayor for 8 years, served on the City Council of Riverton for 4 years before that. His latest political outing was a failed run for one of Utah's Senate seats with then-candidate Donald Trump's endorsement. He tells us that the race taught him a lesson about the power of money in politics when it comes to wider races.
When forced into a direct primary, it became all about money and being outspent by some $15 million. You know, it really is about, unfortunately, with the way our system is set up for statewide races, it really becomes all about money.
Well, Staggs telling ABC 4 News that he's considering options for a future in politics, but for now, he's writing a book. In his final year in office, he hopes to work on more economic development in the city. He calls being a mayor one of the most rewarding things he's ever done. Well, it's being touted as the future of transportation in Utah, air taxis. This week, we got to see them in action. Lawmakers passing a bill this past session to accelerate the development of vertiports. These are stops for these taxis in hopes that they'll be everywhere by 2034 in time for the Olympic Games. ABC4's Kate Gardner was there for their first test flight.
Her name is Aaliyah, and she could just be the future of air travel. For now, she's designed to just fly people from airport to airport. But by the time the Olympics return, she could be used to fly people from ski resort to help alleviate all the additional traffic. Before takeoff,
I want to introduce you to Aaliyah, and I want to thank Beta for bringing her here. Isn't she beautiful?
Dozens of people filled a hangar to get a first look at the future of flying.
My favorite thing about it is that it is quiet. So when you're flying in it, it's very quiet. And you can, if you wanted to, take your headset off, have a conversation with a pilot, which is very abnormal for most aircraft of this size.
Utah State University graduate Emma Davis is a test flight engineer for Beta Technologies.
It's all electric aircraft. It's a very simple design, which leads to a higher reliability, lower cost aircraft that's really optimized for regional missions. So we're talking, you know, Salt Lake City to Bernal, Ogden to Logan, you know, stuff that is kind of connecting the Wasatch Front. It's not always fun to drive across the mountain range. It takes some time.
Aaliyah may soon taxi people across the state, but for now,
we're kind of slowly ramping up production for our conventional takeoff and landing. So all that means is landing at runways and taking off from runways. We're ramping up to have 300 aircraft off the production line per year. And then we're also, at the same time, we're designing, developing, and testing a vertical variant. So one that would take off vertically more like a helicopter, you'd fly like a plane, and then have a vertical landing.
We are very receptive to new technologies.
Carlos Braceras says UDOT is all in on the idea.
We're going to start to see this technology accelerate. Once the FAA certifies this aircraft, we're going to start to see it just become part of, you know, our normal transportation options. So people can go where they want, when they want, how they want, and do so safely.
To accelerate Aaliyah's integration into everyday life.
This year we did $2 million to go through and put charging stations at our major regional airports. There are about 41 of those around the state.
Senator Wayne Harper says the legislature also approved an additional $650,000.
Users can come to UDOT and say, we need this in order to facilitate how we're going to operate.
He says he hopes to see air taxis in use in the state within a year.
To improve the lifestyles of Utah and also to decrease congestions on our roadways.
And fully integrated in time for the Olympics.
People are going to be able to get to their venues using technology such as this. It's going to showcase Utah.
Aaliyah is going to be on display at airports across the state throughout the week. Reporting from Salt Lake City, Kate Garner, ABC 4 News.
Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure you reach out. You can email InsideUtahPolitics@abc4.com. Also, follow along with me on social media, always on X, Blue Sky, and Threads. That's Lindsay on Air, Lindsay spelled with an A. I'm on Instagram as well. You can just search for Lindsay Ertz. Also, you can find our show online in podcast form. So while you're out for your daily walk, just put us in your ear. You can search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz anywhere you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We'll see you next week.